getting back to nature, farming and agriculture, watching things grow, it adds a value to life that I believe that, you know, people were becoming desensitized to. So, you know, the garden is serving multiple purposes and definitely providing people with a therapeutic outlet, even if it's just to be around other people.
Hi there, and welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna, a show where I will share all the amazing and exciting works of sustainability happening across the eastern foothills of the Appalachian Mountains to the lush farmlands of southeastern Pennsylvania. By celebrating our community, we can help to bridge the gap between local and international sustainability endeavors. Today's guest is Bird. Bird is a mental health consultant, urban gardener, herbalist, chef, and active member of the North Philly Peace Park. The North Philly Peace Park is located in the small north central neighborhood of Shars Wood in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Together, her and I talked about the important work the park is doing in the community, like providing educational events, free and freshly grown produce, and social services and events like yoga and psychotherapy. In addition, we also talked about how the park is a place of peace to the community. We discussed what would it mean to their organization and the community to have initiatives like defunding the police and redistribution of that wealth back into the neighborhood they serve. If you would like to learn more about the North Philly Peace Park and the important work they are doing in their community, please visit them at phillypeacepark.org, which is spelled PHILLYPEACEPARK.org. If you would like to learn more about gardening and its many benefits, check out the weekly Ingest newsletter published on June 29th over on the Sustaining with Shayna website. The newsletter can be found under the resource blog tab on the website. Before we meet Bird and hear more exciting information about the North Philly Peace Park, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Excited to have FD Market as our first sponsor of the Sustaining with Shayna podcast. FD Market will be sponsoring us through this episode. FD Market is a small, sustainable, everyday goods shop located in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. Their goal is to provide affordable and practical sustainability products and resources to their community. Better yet, their products are ethically and as locally sourced as possible. Products like alternatives to plastic wrap and storage containers, to shampoo bars and toothpaste tablets. Earlier this year, I was excited to learn about FD Market, a zero waste home goods store that was finally coming to our community. It gives me hope that people now have the opportunity to go sustainable and support a local business at the same time. I'm most excited about trying to reduce my plastic waste consumption in the bathroom. With all the products we use are stored in bottles made with terrible petrochemicals. To start, I've tried the shampoo bars that FD Market sells. Their shampoo bars left my hair feeling fresh and silky smooth. And after weeks of using their shampoo bar, I don't think I could ever go back to conventional shampoo. Do you want to give FD Market a try and to begin a zero waste lifestyle? Well, you're in luck. As part of a special but limited promotion, you can get 15% off your next purchase with the promo code Sustaining with Shayna. That's spelled SUSTAINING WITHSHANA. This promo code can be used on their online store as well as in person. If you don't live in Eastern Pennsylvania, don't worry. FD Market can ship your order right to your front door. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Sustaining with Shayna. I'm super excited about this episode and interview because today I have Bird on from the North Philly Peace Park that's doing some great work. So, Bird, please introduce yourself and the work you do at the Peace Park.
So my name is Bird, and one of the roles that I pretty much play is to actually have my hands in the garden itself. I also end up doing a lot of cooking at North Philly Peace Park. I do have a background in herbs and alternatives to medicine. That's how I was raised. And so I do lend all of that to the park, particularly my hands. If there's something that needs to be cooked for the audience that comes to the park, I will volunteer. I have a background in gardening. My grandparents, paternal grandparents, were sharecrop farmers from the Deep South, so they had a background in it. I've always been, as a child, thrown into someone's garden, either my grandparents, a great aunt, a great uncle. My grandmother kept an indoor garden, pretty much a windowsill garden, so I've always been around plants, and that's what I take into the park. I do counsel full-time. That is my actual field. And so I also provide mental health whenever we do our typical wellness events. I'm usually there to assist with those. There are a lot of different clinicians, peer specialists that are also volunteers in the park. And so we attempt to do an ongoing wellness function. And it'll change from month to month. Some months we will focus on self-care. Other moments, or other months, we will focus on fitness and things of that nature, self-esteem, grief, just all different types of topics. And they pretty much rotate. And typically in the summer, when it becomes nice out, we do kick them up. But with COVID, that has pretty much changed a bit. So we've tried to tailor it to the audience with consideration for what's going on with the pandemic and social distancing. We've scaled back as frequent as we do it, and we try to combine it with some of our other initiatives in the park.
So in addition to a lot of the services that you provide that are self-care, and also for the listeners that would be listening that are not necessarily from Philly, could you talk a little bit more about like what the North Philly Peace Park is and
yes, absolutely,
what it holistically offers to the community?
So North Philadelphia Peace Park is a urban grow initiative by African Americans, and it's pretty much about self-sustainability. One of the things that we pride ourselves off of is the fact that we're an open garden, which means it's open to the entire community. As they need, they can go into the garden and help themselves. We don't have any fences, pretty much. I mean, they're there for decoration, but they're not enclosed. So people can go into this garden and pretty much help themselves to what they need. We do base the work primarily off of volunteers. We do have a set amount of people that are consistently in the garden, maintaining the garden, sustaining the beds and things of that nature. But we do always welcome volunteers to come and actually get their hands dirty in the soil, and we're always open. Monthly, we tend to do a food give back, which has kicked up, especially during COVID-19, because a lot of people found themselves on the need end as far as food was concerned. And, you know, we offer healthy alternatives. We definitely offer different leafy greens, peppers, tomatoes, things of that nature that we grow there. We have an actual plum tree. But it's pretty much an open space, safe space for the community to gather and to actually come and get their hands dirty and to reap the benefits of their labor through the vegetables and the produce that they can actually help themselves to in the garden. It was started about 3 years ago by a few of my comrades, Brother Tommy, Brother Pilly. Then we have, like I said, different peer specialists and clinicians that come through. So we do have V and Camille and a lot of other people. We actually have engineers involved, people who are lending their degrees to what goes on in the park and some of the ideas that are in the making as we speak, mm-hmm. such as our off-grid classroom that we're working on.
Yeah, I'm excited to see more about that and follow that story more with that. So how large would you say like the property is? Because you're talking about a lot of great resources, and I guess to visualize the space, like how big would it be?
I would say it's about a half of a block.
Okay.
We take up about half of a block. We do have space which we are working on to create an indoor space for when weather is inclement. But when we're talking about the outdoor space, I would say it takes up maybe half of a block, if even that. But it's close to half of a block because we could fit three homes on that park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's half of a block is a decent strip of land in the city. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with that being said, most of your people that are serviced by the park, are they mostly of the Black community, or do you see interactions with like other varying ethnic groups?
There's a variety of people who come through. The majority of the people that come through the park that we service, they are African American, African, Latino, and then we have a lot of diversity coming through, especially with COVID. More so volunteers than the actual garden itself to benefit from the garden itself. And I believe that that's just because there were so many that were in their actual areas that they could get to. And so now we're starting to see them in the form of volunteers. we have a lot of different people who are kind of bouncing from urban initiative to urban initiative to help. And so we do eventually get to see a rainbow of diversity come through. If not to benefit, they are coming through just to help and to give back to the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's exciting to hear that, how there's been an uptake of interest and, usage with the park, especially during the time of COVID, and how, there, a couple episodes back, I had a guest on from the city of Reading, where she's a councilwoman, and they're trying to do this Victory Garden initiative, and it's kind of inspiring to see your organization's initiative is like way further down the line, where it's like you're established and there's some resiliency built in for that. So with all these kind of initiatives you have, as far as like offering yoga and therapy and free produce days, which a lot of that you advertise all over your social media, but what also, like, how has this made an impact in the community, in the sense of like, when you think of urban settings, you don't necessarily think of people who farm a lot or understand how to garden or farm. Like, how in these last 2 years of being a part of your community, that's made an impact too?
Well, you have a lot of people that shy away from gardening. They don't believe that they can be involved. You know, they may have a incident with a plant where the plant dies, and then all of a sudden they're just terrified of trying to do anything amongst the earth. And sometimes it's just, it's not necessarily meant for them to have their hands in involved. They could just be watering the garden. They could just be present in the garden, and just getting them comfortable around nature and the earth again is huge. We have a lot of people that have never participated in a garden, but they're just so grateful with the initiatives and the gift bags that they want to get involved. And so we have them come and harvest. We may utilize a volunteer who comes in, who actually came in to receive produce during one of our produce giveaways, that just wants to give back. And so we'll ask them to go through and to take care of a whole entire bed of greens and to just snip all of those so that they can, you know, grow the next week. And that's helpful. And, you know, they'll bag them. Someone will sit and actually bag them. But we have had a lot of volunteers come out in the middle of COVID. We also provide masks. We have a whole mask initiative. A lot of the recipients of that were elders and children and pregnant women. So we've had a lot of mask giveaways. And typically what tends to happen is people will come through to receive something, and they'll just be so overwhelmed by either the beauty of the garden or what the garden provides that the next thing you know, they're volunteering and they've never done anything agriculturally. So it's actually making people in the community very comfortable coming back to agriculture and even trying to understand it, even though they have no background in it, or they, you know, have a disconnect, because there was a period where agriculture was a necessity. And there was no food. If you didn't tend the land, you didn't eat. You know, if you didn't hunt, you didn't eat. And so now, for people to get back to this point of where they are learning or even taking an interest in the garden, that's what we've seen in uprising. There was a lot of people that were not eating during this pandemic, and they didn't know where their next meals were coming from. And to know that there's, you know, a block of food for all, it really woke a lot of people up. Like, you know, perhaps I do need to understand agriculture and urban, any type of urban initiative. And so I can say that we've had a lot of volunteers come through, a lot of people that look to the garden as a consistent source of wellness, just holistic wellness, because they're not just looking at it for produce. They're looking at it for how to cook the produce, how to prepare the farm to table meals and things of that nature. And so it's serving a holistic purpose for the community. We've seen more of the community come out. We've seen a lot of people come to the garden for conflict resolution and assistance with that as well, because a lot of people are currently in conflict where they always were, and now it's magnified times 10. So we're getting a lot of people who actually bring their conflicts to the park to have a safe space to process and to get through it, and to get pointers on how to leave conflicts with some resolution and peace of mind. And that has definitely kicked up during this pandemic.
Yeah.
We're literally out there like every weekend. And some weekdays, whereas before, you know, we had a set schedule, volunteer work parties where we would go and knock everything out, harvest the food, process it to give it away and things of that nature. But now there's a lot more vigilance. And so we're actually down there a lot more since the pandemic kicked off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you were talking about the whole conflict resolution part of it, it made me think of like how the added benefits that a green space like that in an urban setting can do for people's mental health. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah,
it's huge. We just had an event where we had a few licensed psychologists and clinicians come down just to help, you know, to have more hands on deck. And it was lovely. People were there for well over 4 hours. And just in the park processing, and you know, that's it. Getting back to nature, farming and agriculture, watching things grow, it adds a value to life that I believe that, you know, people were becoming desensitized to, So, you know, the garden is serving multiple purposes and definitely providing people with a therapeutic outlet, even if it's just to be around other people who actually are doing the work. You know, it's very therapeutic. There are people who will just pop up and begin meditating, even though we haven't scheduled a meditation. We don't have, you know, our yoga instructors coming out. They'll just come and just sit and meditate and toss their crystals around and just relax.
Yeah, sounds like an amazing experience. And it's just all those added benefits that you never realize till they happen or opportunities like that occur. Yeah, so then kind of, I guess, expanding on that. So there's a lot of community-based gardens and farms in the city of Philadelphia. But is there any, like, network that connects all of you together?
No, I want to say that it just naturally tends to fall together. There are some people in government, state and local, that they have a general interest in urban gardening. And occasionally they'll make an effort to try to bring one or more gardens together to do different things. But it's not just one contact person. Definitely not the case. A lot of times we'll partner with others to attempt to combine with gardens to do a larger produce giveaway and things of that nature. We'll pull all of our resources together, but it doesn't typically always happen. I will say during COVID, there has been more of an initiative. So gardens are just popping up on other gardens and trying to do as much as they can to assist with just different efforts. There are some urban gardens that only do flowers. They don't actually have any produce. So we're, you know, we see a combination of different purposes for the different gardens around Philadelphia. They all serve different purposes. I believe that ours is the only one that has the open space and leaves it open. And for 3 years now, we've been rolling with that initiative. It has been consistent, and it's been good that it, you know, it can remain open, but there's not really a designated person who keeps us all within the loop of each other. Because I know that there's one as far out as Southwest, and I've never even seen it come up on the radar aside from me driving by it. So there's no one that has made a collective effort to just put all of the urban gardens together to make sure that they are considered when funding is redistributed or anything like that.
Yeah, I was just curious because they're kind of all dispersed throughout the city, and to see if there was any way that they work together, or if there was, I guess kind of like the next thought I was thinking is like with the city's like sustainability initiatives, is there any way that they're all like tied together with that, or if there's any way to encourage that more? That's interesting.
I think that they're, you know, they're, I can't say that it wouldn't have happened this summer. I do believe that COVID kind of changed how we communicate, and it changed the priority of a lot of initiatives around the city. And so whereas we normally would be in the summer kicking up initiatives to try to collaborate, that's not necessarily happening. There was a lot of uncertainty around whether urban initiatives would even be allowed to thrive in the middle of the pandemic, because we were in isolation. And so there was a huge fear about even going out. It was just like people would be designated between the team to see who could go out to manage the beds, who could go out to make sure that everything was watered and sustained during the pandemic, and doing so with regards to social distancing. So there, you know, there was this period of just uncertainty surrounding urban gardens, and I can only imagine what other urban gardens were going through. But normally around this time, we would be combining with other gardens that are local or close that, you know, just want to make a huger impact. But COVID has really slowed a lot of this down, but there hasn't been a state or local level to really try to do much. We did receive some media coverage, which kind of kicked everything into high gear also during the protest. And I want to say that that caused a lot of energy to be redirected into urban initiatives, which was excellent.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. So then with talking about that and kind of redirecting interest in other initiatives like your garden in particular, how could you see in a world that we defund the police, like how could defunding the police and other programs within the city directly better benefit your initiatives or also the neighborhood in which your organization serves?
It's hard to say. We have a lot of police activity around the park. They're kind of standoffish when it comes to the park because it is a peaceful place and it typically promotes or prompts peace within even the neighborhood. So anytime that there is a conflict, I believe that the police kind of just stand down and wait for things to resolve. It's no secret that the park is there. And so a lot of times they'll, you know, just kind of stand by, like, is anyone else going to dissolve this before we have to intervene? And that's what we've seen on more occasions than one. And so when I think of things like that, you know, obviously you don't want to see hardworking people unemployed, but there does need to be a redistribution and a reconsideration for more effective strategies to healing communities and whatever they're going through. And a lot of the incidents that call for police are rooted in poverty and lack of access and resources. So, you know, if they were to consider these types of initiatives as an alternative, it would be excellent for the community because the community is starting to look at the park, prime example, as a place to go for conflict resolution. You know, we've had domestic disputes get resolved in our park. So things like that, you know, putting more effort into redirecting perhaps social workers and things like that into public places and spaces like that so that people actually know that they can go without judgment and actually receive adequate help to process and to perhaps find some resolve. Because a lot of times people need to be away from each other and with isolation, it has really pushed that up to the forefront that, you know, sometimes separation and space to process and to heal or grieve is best. And, you know, if there were funds and resources redistributed into community initiatives, I'm certain it would make a difference and an impact in communities. You know, everybody can't do everything, but it is good when people assess what's effective and actually consider how to utilize those things together to be effective.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention too, it's like having educational programs that could better serve the community that could be funded. And those educational programs could be that dividing line between like a bad situation to a situation that wouldn't have happened otherwise if you had the available funding and the opportunities to service the community.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important. So you mentioned...
Yeah, like a wellness center.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So you mentioned earlier that you're in the process of incorporating this pavilion on the site of your park. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. So it's pretty much going to be outdoor classroom space, which provides people a indoor space. It's going to be off-grid. So solar panels, things of that nature, really beautiful. constructed by some of our volunteers who, again, are volunteering their degrees and mastery level certifications to just really come up with a really awesome outdoor classroom space. One of the things that we try to do is to assure safety. And we have a lot of children that come through the park, a lot of STEM programs that have come through the park, a lot of summer camps. And so we would like to continue the initiative and to have that safe space where we can do things like conduct cooking classes and teach children hands-on learning, continue, because they're doing it outside as we speak, but not so much with COVID. But we would like to provide that space for these things to continue, because we've seen summers where these things have heavily thrived. This will be our first summer where we haven't hosted a slew of children's summer camps. And so having that classroom space would allow us to pretty much continue what we've been doing, just indoors and, you know, away from all of the elements. We could have these events rain, shine, even teaching children about eco-friendly ways of functioning. You know, mm-hmm. So the solar panels, that would even be a teachable experience for the people that are coming through, and just having them understand how to sustain their communities without with the least amount of resources and without doing any harm to the earth. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping to have this going soon. We have raised a large portion of the money that we set out to raise. I believe that we are down to needing 20,000, and we ended up at that number really swiftly.
Wow.
I believe we started with 50, and then within maybe a month, we were down to 20, needing 20,000. So, yeah. So we have a lot of community efforts pouring in. A lot of people are providing us with percentages of every purchase made in their shops and in their stores and for their art and for their yoga classes. So we have a ton of community support, which we always welcome. It's coming in and we are so grateful for it, but we're almost at our goal.
That's really exciting. And so the campaign for that, is that the campaign for Black Joy? The one that's to raise the money for the building.
Yeah, yes. And you'll constantly see children somewhere on that advertisement. The effort is largely based off of them and the imagination. Like, one of the huge things that we promote there is imagination. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the youth, we take their input. We take their input into what's designed and what it should look like. So this classroom definitely, you know, understand that they've participated in what this will look like for us. So, you know, of course, we have mastery level experts that are putting it together, but we also have very young mastery level experts that are young and they're creative and they have a lot of insight as to what you know, more sustainable community should look like and feel like. And they have put their two cents in. So a lot of what you see is some of the things that they've come up with also.
Yeah, I have seen kids in those advertisements for sure. Mm-hmm. And I will say, like, speaking from personal experience, when I worked for an organization out here in Berks County that I was teaching sustainable agriculture to young children, and sometimes they have the most raw and genuine responses or interest in things. And while I was working for this organization at the time, they were building a new building, and I wish they would have had a little bit more input from the students that they serve and the campers that they have, because I can't imagine what that space could look like. It would be probably even more exciting than it is if they put young people's perspective in it a little bit more. But
yes.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And it's always rewarding to work with children and to hear some of the ideas that they come up with, for sure.
Yeah, they're responsible for deciding how half of the land is used. There's a whole set of other beds, and they pretty much control what goes in there, because we still have a lot of children that have grown with the park. They've been in the park since childbirth and things of that nature, so they have a lot of say. We have children that are coming as far as New Jersey to come and volunteer. It's their safe haven. Children's football teams that come, that spend time in summer camp, they still are attached to the land. So they'll come back to volunteer and things of that nature. They pretty much have decided what those beds are purposed for. I mean, one bed will have like 100 things of peppers in them, but it's theirs. And, you know, they feel connected when they come back to take care of those beds. One plant, you know, children take so much pride in it. So there are certain beds that are just off limits to anyone else. That's their beds. They decide what goes in it. You can eat the stuff out of it, but they get to decide what goes into it. So we have a nice little combination of whatever they've thrown in there. We kind of figure out what they've thrown in there once it starts to fruit. But they have a lot of input as to what goes in the park and how it should look aesthetically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can't imagine, too, as, like, some of the things you talked about earlier with your personal life, and, like, speaking from my personal experience of, like, how when you have that relationship with the earth and the soil at a very young age, like, that just starts a precedence for the rest of your life. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I can't imagine how in their situation, just even being able to touch the soil and work with the soil at that young of an age does for them on a personal level. I mean, we can only speak from personal experiences, but it's an amazing experience, I will say, with that. And then, so with your organization that you work with, that's only about 2 years old, if there's any listeners out there who are interested in learning more or would like to start their own urban garden or urban farm in their community, is there any advice that you would give them?
Look for, you know, land that isn't being utilized. Scope it out, do some research on it, figure out if it's private property. Pretty much look at, you know, where it is foot traffic wise. Is it accessible to many in the community? And if so, you know, start to ask around, like, what has this land been purposed for? You know, could it be repurposed for the community? And usually once you set out to make it beneficial to the community, it will fall in. It makes it hard for people to combat that. As long as it isn't a nuance and it isn't causing more hardship to the community than good, it's usually hard for people to give you any pushback on it. They're usually like, okay, go ahead, just do it and you know, get out of our office. But, you know, you start small. And, I mean, it could be even in your apartment complex for those of us out there that are in apartment complexes. You could go, it could be as simple as you going to the property manager and asking if you could have a particular area of the apartment complex purposed for a grow initiative. And they may be willing to say yes. You know, they may not provide a pool and a tennis court in your apartment complex, but they may be willing to allow you to have 4 garden beds in the summer and actually may donate something to it. And it looks nice as a property plus. And so things like that make certain property value go up. The fact that there is a urban initiative to give people a safe space to be and a safe space to grow and learn and to benefit by any type of community give back. It's less work for the city. It's less work for landlords. It's less work for the community when everybody's working together. And so you may not get a lot of pushback from that. You might actually get more community initiative. And you can also check the local borough, because a lot of times they'll tell you what land is basically off limits and what you actually can use. There may be gray areas, and you can find that out by just going to your local borough and asking a few questions, like, what is this address being purposed for? Does it belong to anyone? Is it for sale? And things of that nature. You could purchase a lot that mm-hmm. you found, and you'd be surprised. It would be like $1,000 with a little bit of tax arrears on it, but something affordable. And now you have this whole lot which you own, and you know, could write in a will that it's to be continually purposed for the community. And now you have an urban lot that is a grow initiative. I also am connected to a lot of people in Harrisburg who are attached to agriculture, the Department mm-hmm. of Agriculture. And so there are a lot of urban initiatives there. And what they did was just basically went through and said, okay, what in the city is it being used? Is it near things like a YMCA and places like that? And they're like, sure, you know, you can have it. Go ahead and use it if it's to be used for this purpose. So now there's a lot of different pop-up gardens around Harrisburg. And the same can be done anywhere that, you know, you are. You just want to develop a respectable relationship with your local government, and particularly the boroughs, because they tend to have the land layout and what is used and what isn't, what's the property value and things of that nature, if it's for sale, if it's up for grabs and stuff like that. And so it's good to find out what is off limits and what isn't. And then once you have that information, you just go from there. Mm-hmm. And then you pretty much start working with donations, because you'd be surprised at what you can accomplish with very little. You know, it doesn't always require a raised bed. Sometimes the soil is pretty good there. Sometimes there, you know, it's near a water source and things like of that nature. So you want to think of those things too. Can you actually get water to this place, and how often? You know, are you relying on rainfall? How much within its distance? Hey, is near toxic things, because you have to be mindful of that as well. Like, what is near it that's toxic? Because that makes a difference too. You don't want oil running off and destroying everything that you're attempting to do. And so you want to pay attention to what it's near. You know, do you have a source of sunlight to even run solar panels and things of that nature? Where we are is pretty good. A lot of sunlight as well as shade. So we have a combination of both sunlight and shade, but we do have a team of people who are literally there to research land and the repurposing of land. And so it's always good to find someone somewhere that has a area of expertise that you don't, and they have information that you may not, because that's going to be your go-to person when you want to just start a community initiative. They're going to be the person that can call the city and ask for certain permits and things of that nature. So that, you know, that's what we try to do. We try to assemble a team of people who just have a plethora of information in different areas. We have educators, we have, you know, occasional politicians that do have a passion for urban initiatives. And, you know, while we may not necessarily have funding sources from the city, we have people who understand the ins and outs of how to go about claiming land for the purpose of the community's use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3 years, I can't say that it's been easy. Like, we've had pushback from the city of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you were explaining that, I was thinking of a situation that I experienced, maybe not directly, but I belong to a church in Northwest Reading, and the pastor and the church council was trying to get this plot of land across the street that I think they were able to buy or something, but it took them almost a decade, if not a decade or a little bit longer, to actually secure that property because of the fact that it was like all this red tape, all these other issues. But we also had a bad mayor at the time mm-hmm. that occupied part of that decade. But I think also the other issue is, like you said, is knowing if the soil is viable, because that strip of land that was across the street from the church was also a block behind an old factory building. So there okay. was a lot of like heavy metals in the soil. So
yeah,
a lot of what you're saying is really important. And that example I gave kind of really plays out the all these different factors that come yeah. into play. And the community is very supportive of the fact of them starting this community garden. It just, it took a while because it's like, there's all these compounding issues. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and because of now having it, it's made a big impact in the community. And it's amazing to see what community gardening can do in an urban setting for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so before wrapping up here, and I'll asking you some funky questions at the end, do you have any last thoughts?
No, I would encourage people, you know, regardless of what their background is, to become comfortable, you know, amongst the earth, even if you're not a novice, or, you know, it doesn't matter that you don't have experience with growing things. You know, sometimes it's not for you to grow anything. It's for you to just sit and be present and grow. And so, you know, get comfortable coming back to nature and agriculture and understanding the process of how food is produced and how long it takes, so that, you know, you respect things like consumption, overconsumption, because it doesn't happen overnight. You know, a head of lettuce doesn't grow in one day. It takes a process. And as you start to learn the process, we start to become humane again. We start to respect the circle of life by spending more time around it. And ultimately, I think that that's what everyone's crying out for globally. It's just humanity that we've highly strayed away from, and one of the greatest places to start is in the garden. You will swiftly gain a sense of humanity by just spend time in the garden. You know, you'll be visited by butterflies, you'll see birds, you'll see earthworms, you'll see a lot that happens and transpires, and start to understand how everything plays a role in what we have and what we hope to keep, or what we hope to gain as a globe, because there's a global outcry right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like that was beautifully said, for sure. So my first quirky question to ask to kind of wrap up here is, if you have a definition for sustainability, what would it be?
I would have to say consistency and commitment, because self-sustainability, it doesn't happen if there's no commitment or consistency. A lot of times we will become emotionally revved up to do something and then there's no follow through. And so, you know, first you have to make a commitment that that's what you actually want. And once you make that commitment, then you'll need to follow it up with consistency. You'll have to go sometimes when you don't actually feel like going. You'll have to be present when you don't feel like showing up. It's not always easy, but it is worth it in the end. And that's the only way that things are going to ever be self-sustained. You'll have to commit and make a commitment, and you'll have to follow that through with consistency.
Mm-hmm. So
if you don't, things perish.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that definition thinking in mind, if you were to wrap all of that up and sustainability into one word, what would it be?
One word. Consistency.
If you had a favorite vegan dish, what would it be?
That's a hard one. I go back and forth with vegan, being a vegan, a vegetarian, and occasionally introducing fish back into my diet. So that's a really hard one because I like to cook. Here in Philadelphia, we have a few chefs. So I would have to say Mama K's carrot tuna salad is the best. But then I also like a green sauce that a vegan chef by the name of Adio makes. Adio is between D.C., New York, and Philadelphia, but very well known here in Philadelphia. She makes a cilantro green sauce that goes on everything. Ooh. So it doesn't matter what you serve. You could serve couscous, quinoa. If you have her green sauce, it goes on everything from salad to grains to mock meats and walnut meatballs. It goes over everything. So those are my two favorites. Combined, that would be amazing. But carrot tuna is usually my go-to. I like jerk jackfruit too. I'll take jerk jackfruit any day.
That sounds really good. Yeah, as you were describing all of that, it made me think of falafels. Like, I really want
to. Oh yeah.
I really want to make falafels.
With her green sauce. Oh man.
Oh, that sounds just amazing.
It's, I know a base, the part of the base is cilantro. I don't know the rest, but it's amazing to have it on everything.
I'll try to look out for that for sure. Mm-hmm. With sustainability, there's all these different kinds of brands and services out there. If you mm-hmm. could think of a favorite sustainability brand, what would it be?
The Honey Pot Company. I love their stuff, their feminine products, their feminine wash, and their menstrual hygiene products. Like, their stuff mm-hmm. is just really awesome. I remember when they were in their earlier phases, their boxes, everything was, you know, just around eco-friendly and trying to remain eco-friendly, plant-based and things of that nature. So it was always an amazing product to me that has consistently been amazing, even with the fancy boxes, you know, now that they're being sold at Target. I remember their beginnings, and the product has always been very effective and awesome on the body. It's a really consistently decent plant-based product made, you know, by women for women. And one of the things that I think is so awesome about it is that they recognize the ancestors, and they're constantly talking about how the ancestors came to them in a dream and told them to create this product. And so just the spiritual obedience that led to such an awesome product that is thriving and is staying consistent is amazing. That's eco-friendly and plant-based. I take a lot of pride in using their products, but that's one company that I really, really love.
I've actually never heard of them, which is really cool. I'm going to discover them and learn more about them. So they sell mm-hmm. them at Target now?
Yeah, they've ended up at Target and Walmart. It took a while. Originally, you had to order everything through them directly online. And then it shifted to, they had a few products on Amazon and eBay. And then eventually Target decided to pick them up, as well as Walmart. So we're still seeing the growing phase of this company, but the company is amazing.
They have
some really cool products, really cool products.
Yeah, it sounds really exciting. Yeah. And then my last and final question is, if you could pick any like dream job in sustainability, in addition to what you do right now for a living, what would it be and why?
I would have to say teaching children or learning from them. It's more so a learning experience, because you're not just teaching them, they're teaching you, and you're learning with them as they learn. That is one of the most humbling experiences. So to work with them through nature, around nature, in nature, that would be an amazing job. I would do it without pay. It is definitely a humbling experience. It puts me in a very humble space when I'm learning with them. When they're out in the garden, you know, that's an example of it. But I would love to travel and do it. I would love to, especially with what has gone on with COVID, I would love to just travel and meet them in their environment, because every environment is different. So Lancaster, you know, which, you know, has a lot of farms, does not look like Philadelphia, and it doesn't look like New Jersey. And so, you know, Amish country doesn't look like inner city. So I would just love to travel and work with children in their spaces of nature and just really learn with them and teach them about just economic sustainability and doing no harm to the earth while living here, like actually taking care of the earth that we live on, and how to do that, what that looks like, so that we benefit and so that the earth benefits and nobody's losing. I would love to do that, you know, full time if I could. Just learning with them is so fun outdoors. I think there's a lot of initiatives now, like Tinker Garden, where the classrooms are being taken outdoors and children are just learning how to survive and thrive in the actual wilderness like type of setting. Those are so cool to me, where they're like learning how to be in a stream and learning about temperatures by being in them, you know, learning how to be wet and cold and chilly, and why, you know, you should consider having on multiple layers in certain types of weather, things like that. Like, those are very rich and advanced experiences that I believe that children should have. And I would love to be the person that goes around the entire continent and teaches them that, or learns it with them. So that would be like my dream job.
Yeah, I resonate with that a lot, for sure. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Bird, for coming on the podcast. And I'm excited.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I'm excited to follow more and seeing what the North Philly Peace Park has in store for the community, as well as the new exciting projects you're doing with your outdoor classroom and stuff like that. And I'll also provide information for our listeners about your organization.
Awesome. Thank you so much for...
Thanks for listening to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. You can now listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor.fm, and many other platforms. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave a review or comment. To follow us on Facebook or Instagram, go to sustainingwithshayna.com. Also, what you read and listen to here on the platform was carefully created and curated content made just for you, the listeners. Any generous donations can help to keep me supplying you with great content. Just go to Sustaining with Shayna's website. Click on the donate page to donate. Glad you're here. Thanks a million for listening.